D. Mace, Finnegan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Derek Mason, Adam Vingern, let's go to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our friend, Teron Davenport, ESPN, NFL Nation, Titans reporter. Hello, Teron, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
I am excellent. Derek is as well. So, Teron, earlier we were talking about the Titans and Brian Callahan and Mike Borgonzi specifically about how they are stressing that there will be a competition for reps at quarterback. And to me, the novice who is not in the locker room every day, to me it feels a little bit like lip service because I feel like it's inevitable that Cam Ward is ultimately going to take the lion's share of the starting reps and be the starting quarterback. So I asked this question to Tim Hasselbeck earlier. I would love your opinion as well. What is the benefit for the Titans to tempering those expectations perhaps and not just anointing Cam Ward the starter right away?
Well, I think we saw last year what happens when you just put it all out there and you don't really taper the expectation and you know, set the expectation, so to speak, and you fall short, and it's a big issue. Now, I don't think they're putting competition out there just because they think they're going to fall short. I think it is setting the expectation and making the young man compete somewhat, because just because they're saying it's a competition, that doesn't mean that it's, you know, a competition like, two guys who have a legitimate chance to start. You know, it's just like me saying, hey, it's a nice day out today. It is a nice day, but to what degree of nice is it? You know, so there's different levels.
So, Teron, you published a story on ESPN.com looking at some of the questions that the Titans need to answer post-draft. And one of the questions in the article is, did the Titans address pass rusher sufficiently? Let's ask you that question back. Did the Titans address pass rusher sufficiently in your mind?
I would say no. I don't think they're in a position to where, and listen, I love the upside that Femi Oladejo has. I think he can, you know, blossom into a good player. I've seen this happen before. You know, I remember Brandon Graham got pushed outside, as a stand-up outside backer at the Senior Bowl. And, you know, he had a rough first couple years with the Eagles. And that's not to say that Femi Oladejo is Brandon Graham, but I'm just looking at similarities in guys who were late to the position but still got drafted high. I don't think they addressed it adequately enough. The Draymond Jones is going to be interesting because talking to Mike McDonald, he said that Draymond could stand up and rush the passer. He has that versatility to play anywhere from, you know, three all the way up to seven, and in some cases rush as a wide nine type of guy. I don't think they have an impactful pass rusher. I think with Za'Darius Smith still on the market, that's something I definitely would look at, but I mean, you think about it, they don't have a single guy who has, a double-digit sack season. And I think the highest season, I think Arden Key might have it at 7.5, if I'm not mistaken.
So you mentioned Za'Darius Smith still being out there. What do you think it would take? What kind of contract do you think it would take to lure him to Nashville?
I don't think it would take a whole lot, honestly. I feel, you look at a veteran like Z. Smith, you know, what he wants is an opportunity to play. He wants an opportunity to be in a good environment. He's going to be attracted to Denard Wilson's scheme. So I don't think it would take much. I don't know what the number would exactly be, but it's not like it's going to break the bank.
We'll talk with Teron Davenport discussing the Tennessee Titans and their upcoming season. Now, Teron, when you're looking at this quarterback situation, and listen, we know it's not a competition when it comes to the other guys behind Cam Ward. That's not who he's competing with. I told Adam and Willie that he's competing with time. He's competing with when they give him the playbook to the first game of the season. That's what he's competing with. What can they how far along you believe he needs to be? Is it they need to trust him, or does he need to trust what's going on before they put him in?
Yeah, I think it's a two-way street, right? It's just like a regular relationship. You know, you have to be able to trust your lady, and a lady has to be able to trust you. And not to beyond all, like, you know what a person's capable of, and you understand that, but you know you have to trust that person. I think it's the same thing where Cam Ward and this whole idea that, you know, he absolutely has to start the season on the bench. No, I think he should play. This is a decision that they made when they drafted him number one, and they didn't get, you know, a backup other than Brandon Allen or Tim Boyle. So it's a matter of him trusting them to put him in position and them trusting him to deliver when they put him in position. So the ideal thing is to make this – you look at what – you know, they did in Washington with Jaden Daniels. You know, they found out exactly what he was comfortable working in at LSU, and it was just like a second season at LSU initially, and then they opened the concepts up and introduced him to more things as the year went on, and he just continued. There was that low, right? There was that down period, but this man did lead them to the NFC Championship game. And I'm not saying Cam Ward could do that. I'm not saying he will or he won't, but it is the same type of program that you have to be on, about allowing him to hit the ground running, using things that he's very familiar with and things that he's comfortable with, and designing the offense. Like, I got so excited. I said design multiple ways. Designing the offense around him.
And isn't that what – because Brian Callahan has been through that. With Joe Burrow.
Exactly.
Figuring out what he did well at LSU and trying to find a way to implement that into the offense that exists now, to help him sort of, you know, be able to get on that bike and ride a little bit faster than not. So that is something that I'm sure Brian Callahan and that coaching staff is looking for in regards to Cam Ward and trying to get him up to speed. Because ultimately – if he's not the starter, then we have a problem. That's just the way I feel about it. Because, listen, they're not drafting guys. And I know it sounds great, and it probably would be the best thing to do, but we're not talking about what's best to do. We're talking about how fast can we get this quarterback up to speed where we can start him day one, because you don't draft a guy number one overall. Just look at all the picks in the last 10 years. You don't draft a guy number one overall and say, oh, we're going to have him sit at no position. So why are we expecting that from the quarterback?
Right, exactly. And the thing is, it may be the best decision to let him sit and wait. It may not be, right? You look at Jaden Daniels didn't sit. He got right in. You look at, you know, some of the other guys. I mean, there's multiple. Joe Burrow didn't sit. And, again, I'm not saying Cam Ward is Joe Burrow, but these are other situations where it worked. I think
C.J. Stroud, Trevor Lawrence, all these
guys. I mean, look, you find there's multiple examples. And to me, I think that it's a decision that they made, because I still remember vividly. Like, I literally remember where I was standing talking to Mike Borgonzi at the Senior Bowl. And I remember him saying, we got to figure out if these guys coming out are guys that we could play right away or if we need to have a bridge quarterback. He said that, like, that was when I asked him about the plan, that's specifically what he said. But he was like, you know, no matter what, we're going to build in the trenches first, but we got to figure out which destination we're going to go with this quarterback situation. And that tells you right there, they believe Cam Ward will play immediately, and he will.
Now, okay, do you feel – think about this or answer this. When you're looking at both sides of the ball, you're just looking at the team, both sides of the ball, who do you think more pressure is on? Not pressure, I think, from the organization as far as what Borgonzi or Brinkert are thinking, but I'm saying pressure on how to get this team – to where they need to go quickly, or the quarterback quickly. Denard Wilson, and this may be a crazy question to answer. Denard Wilson or Brian Callahan? Because I look at it from this standpoint. If you have a top half or you have a top 10 defense, that gives the offensive coordinator/head coach more leeway to work with his quarterback because he understands that we are going more times than not, we're going to get three and outs. We're going to get you the ball back if you turn it over. We're going to be able to allow you to bring the quarterback along slowly. Why? Because games are going to be 14-13, 17-10, somewhere around that age where we still got an opportunity to win football games late in the games, even with a rookie quarterback. So I look at it from this standpoint that there is an immense pressure on Denard Wilson to get this defense to playing the way he wants them to play, because if you get them playing a lot better, it takes the pressure off the offense.
Yeah, I'll reason with that, and that's something that they said. You know, you want to be in a situation where Cam Ward isn't asked to score 30 points a week, you know. But at the same time, I think conversely, Cam Ward being able to put up points, minimize turnovers, you know, good field positioning, all that stuff, like not have – you know how many times we've seen. Jeffrey Simmons has said it over and over again. Like, he feels like the defense is a fire team, right? They always have to go out and put out the fire, but the mindset's always, okay, no matter where the ball gets put down and snapped from, we got to stop them from scoring. So I think, you know, conversely, the offense could help the defense also. Ultimately, it's both sides helping each other. But to me, the pressure is most on Brian Callahan. And I think you look at this situation, and that's why I asked him specifically about that. And he said, you know, it's a privilege. And I think he's right, because you look at this situation, they got a quarterback. It has not worked getting a top 10 quarterback for this organization, you know, to the level of success that they've wanted. And that's required, you know, when you get a quarterback that high. Brian Callahan has a history of working with guys, and it's on him to make this work. And then I think if you look at it, you know, a lot of second-year coaches, you know, that get a new quarterback, go check the internet. Not too many of them are able to make it unless their name is Sean Payton. So, you know, it's just a lot of pressure on him. And ultimately, you know, if things don't go right for the defense, you know, he could make a move. But I think things are going – I think this defense is going to be okay, you know, as long as they stay healthy.
Now, and this may be a crazy question, but what do you think the organization, like people within the building, what do you think? Because I saw that Brian Callahan said something about Treylon Burks last week. I think he said he understands what he has to do coming in and being ready and all this other stuff. Basically, some of the same stuff he said last year. But how do you think people feel about him within that building? We know that he's had his injuries and his ups and downs, and you know, the fan base has pretty much checked out on him. But what do you think? How do you think they feel about him within a locker room? I'm saying the building, like execs and all those guys.
Okay, yeah, because the players, you know, they're, from what I could gather, you know, they're on some. It is what it is. Like you know, it's an opportunity for me. You know, I that's something that Bryce Oliver should be thinking, right? That's exactly. Something that a lot of these guys should be thinking, but at the same time, it's like, man, you want to see your fellow, you know, guy on the team do right, right, and be okay. But I think in the building, I think there's a sense of frustration and that, like, man, there's always something. You know what I mean? And unfortunately, that's kind of been the pattern, right, for Treylon Burks. There's always something, and it's just like, you know, as soon as you get your hopes up and you're like, boom, something else happens, and it's just like, wow. Back down to, you know, where we were. And I think that's the mindset that a lot of them have. They understand the promise, the hope, but it's just a glimmer of it now, given all the things that have happened.
Do you think people in the building sense that he loves football? And maybe you can't answer it, but I'm just saying, you understand what I'm saying. Like, yeah. I've had people say, well, this guy, I don't think he loves football.
Yeah. That's a great question. I think there could be a degree of questioning that. Mm-hmm. You know, I think there could be a degree. You look at last year, right? Last year, a month from now, last year, you know, the trip to Cabo. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a trip that Treylon Burks absolutely should have been on. I'm not privy to the exact details. I've been told a reason why, but I haven't, you know, got that directly from him, so I'm not going to put it out there. But to me, there should definitely have been, like, he should have been there. If not before anybody else, he should have at least been there. because that's it's critical for him to create that relationship. Because we remember what happened with Ryan Tannehill, where it was the disconnect. I remember week after week, hey, Ryan, like, what? Why didn't you go to Trail and he was open on this? And he would always, you know, say, okay, well, my read took me elsewhere, this, that, and the third. You want to be the guy your quarterback wants to throw to. You want to be the Xavier Restrepo to Cam Ward at Miami. You want to be that. But the only way that you could develop that, and you'll hear Xavier talk about that this weekend, the only way you could develop that is by spending time in the film room, on the field, and countless hours together to get to know each other. That was an opportunity that was missed.
Teron, before we let you go, I have an NFL-wide question for you. We saw here Warren Moon give Cam Ward his blessing to wear his number one. And it feels, and this is anecdotal, but it feels like we're seeing more of that. I know Abdul Carter, he wanted to wear Lawrence Taylor's number. Lawrence Taylor declined. Apparently, Phil Simms was open to giving Abdul Carter number 11. His family intervened and told him to keep it to himself. Where do you stand on young players asking retired players who have their jerseys retired for their numbers?
I mean, I feel if the player doesn't have an issue with it, the veteran, you know, the legend doesn't have an issue with it, I feel it should be okay. And honestly, half of these organizations, like you look at Keith Bullock, right? Femi Oladejo is wearing number 53. I mean, Chig got number 85. What are we doing here? Like, so if a number is really sacred, you know, those are two numbers that, in my opinion, are sacred, but they've been recycled multiple times. So I'm just like, if the player is okay with it, the legend is, I'm okay with it. But, I mean, there's certain circumstances. Like, Lawrence Taylor, no, you don't ask Lawrence Taylor for the number.
Nah.
Warren Moon is just as much of a legend. In my opinion, one of the best to ever throw a football. But this situation is a little different in that it's Oilers to Titans. I get that. But, if the legend's okay, I'm okay.
Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter, joining us on D-Maze, Fingan, and Donick. Teron, great stuff as always, my friend. We'll chat next week.
All right, for sure. Appreciate you.
Always a pleasure to talk to TD. 615-737-1025. Some interesting comments there, Derek, about Treylon Burks. Let's explore those. Coming up next, 615-737-1025. Derek Mason, Adam Fingan, we are presented by Bet365. Whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365, 1025, 1063, the game.
As you look at Burks, Treylon Burks in this current situation, like what can you expect from him for this year?
Well, he's got to get healthy first. You know, that's the first part. He's still working back. We'll see where that ends up when he actually gets cleared. But he's got to come in and make some plays. You know, I think he's always had the ability. He's shown flashes of it, and they're just looking for the consistency to show up when it's time to show up. And I thought there was some things that were good last year. But then again, just there's the moment to make the play, right? When the play is there to be made, to make it with consistency and show up production-wise when the ball comes your way. And I thought he really improved last year from the time he came in to the shape that he was in into training camp. And then, didn't start probably the way that he wanted to, or really any of us wanted to for that matter. And then had the injury. So never really had a chance to get going. But we need to see if we can get the consistency part down. I think that's for everybody on our football team right now, is that execution over time at the rate that's expected.
That was Brian Callahan on Treylon Burks. Have you seen the movie Mean Girls, Derek?
Yes, I have.
Just like Gretchen Wieners with the word fetch, the Tennessee Titans are trying their darndest to make Treylon Burks happen. It's not going to happen. I'm going to have to play Regina George here, Brian Callahan. Treylon Burks is not going to happen. As Teron Davenport notes in the story he wrote that I referenced with him, Burks is recovering from a torn ACL last November and won't be ready to return when the Titans take the field for training camp in July. We've gone through this so many times with Treylon Burks. It's just, again, he's had some awful injury luck. Mm-hmm. But again, let me remind you that in three seasons, Treylon Burks has a grand total of one receiving touchdown. And I believe he suffered a concussion on that play mm-hmm. against the Eagles, if I recall correctly. So
he technically has two because he
well, he recovered a fumble.
Yeah, yeah. So technically there's two.
He has two total touchdowns, but he has one receiving touchdown. That's my point.
He has caught one touchdown.
Technically, he has two touchdowns. He technically has two touchdowns. So that's all you need to know.
He is a receiver, and he has one receiving touchdown. I stand by that. I am a stickler for details.
Facts.
So
you got me there.
Okay. So I thought those were some pointed comments from Teron Davenport, Derek, on your question about Treylon Burks. He was referencing a trip, and I looked it up to make sure. Will Levis took his skill players to Cabo San Lucas last summer to train. And I don't remember Treylon Burks not being there. But clearly, it did not sit well, it sounds like.
There was a trip that I guess Will Levis had took the receivers out and running backs, whoever, and Treylon didn't join them. Now, I don't know why he didn't join them, but he didn't join them. And that's why, you know, because this kid has immense talent. It's there. You see it in spurts. It's there. If it wasn't, they wouldn't have drafted him so high. He was going to be a first-round pick regardless. The Titans just, you know, did what they needed to do and draft them, thinking they were going to get what A.J. Brown was giving them eventually. They were going to get that from Treylon, and it hasn't happened. So this kid has talent, man, and you could just see it in flashes. But, you know, for whatever reason, and some of it has to do, with being available. When you're not available, it's hard to build consistency. And when it's hard to build consistency, it's hard to build trust. And when you can't build that trust, man, you're not going to be on the team for a long time. So, you know, when you're hurt and you haven't shown anything, man, oh, man, that becomes frustrating. And that's why I wanted to ask that question, because Brian Callahan has said periodically and even recently that Treylon knows what he has to do, you know, take advantage of the opportunities and come in ready to work. And, you know, I just wonder, does he love the game of football? Is he one of those guys that, you know, what can I do for the league or what can the league do for me? Which one is he? Because there's a stark difference between, you know, those guys that want to leave a legacy in this game, a good one. You know those guys. You can point those guys out. Even if they may not get there, you can point them out by their work, everything. But then you can point out very quickly the ones that want to ask, well, what can the league do for me? You know, you see those guys. I've seen a lot of them. And I'm trying to figure out which one is he. Do the organization view him as a guy that wants to leave a legacy, not just on his team, a good one, but in the NFL? Or do they look at him as he's one of these guys, you know, he want, you know, to see what the league can do for him. You know, he's not really into it. And what I mean by want to see what the league can do for, it's that exterior thing, that exterior stuff, you know, the notoriety that the league play, the money that it gives you, and it affords you to do some things. Are you that type of guy, or do you really like love this game? I've always like, I don't love the game. I love competition. That's what I love. And football was just a vessel, but I love competition. Like, I was the type of dude, well, my family was the type of people that made me play a guy until always competing. Just because he's bigger don't mean he's better. Compete with him. Outlast him. That's where I come from, a background of that. What is his background? That's what I would like. Because your background a lot of times dictates, especially in sports, how you approach it. You know? I'm not saying he didn't have to grind or anything like that. That's not what I'm saying. Grinding is, and what I'm explaining is two different things. Like, coming from a certain area and really putting are two different things. You can come from an area but not have that in you.
I just remember last summer, you and I were doing the show. We weren't officially a team yet, but we were doing the show from Titans training camp. It was during one of the joint practices with the Seattle Seahawks, and we were on the sideline watching practice. And I believe it was Will Levis lofted a ball toward the corner of the end zone on the sideline we were on. We see Treylon Burks run toward the corner. He goes up for the ball. He disappears because of the vantage point we have. And I don't see him for a few seconds. I'm like, where's Treylon Burks? Next thing I know, he's being helped off the field by a trainer. And I'm just like, again, it's hard to watch Treylon. Look, I don't know Treylon Burks. Mm-hmm. I know that he was a first round caliber talent. I know that him being selected with the first round pick that the Titans acquired for trading AJ Brown was always going to be something that hung over him. I just at this point with the injuries, as Teron said, it's just one step forward, maybe four steps back. Mm-hmm. And I just think that sometimes the best thing for a player in any sport is to get a fresh outlook. And I just don't see a benefit for Treylon Burks being on the Titans anymore. I think it would be best for him to go to another organization where he can start fresh and he can try to impress a new regime and he doesn't have the, well, I was the pick that we got for trading AJ Brown hanging over him. I just don't see a pathway for Treylon Burks to have a successful career here. One texter before we get to you. I'm sorry. One texter says, I'm old enough to remember when Trevor Maddich called out Traylon's effort last year and everyone got mad. Mm-hmm. Chris says, Derek, do we need to take your temperature? Are you not feeling well? You are way off base. He may have talent, but as you said, availability is the main issue.
How am I off base? That's what I've been saying. Like, the kid has talent, but he just hasn't been able to put it together. Just think about this. I sort of related to this. A majority of the people love dogs, and a majority of the people, when they're going to get their dogs, they go to wherever, whether it be, you know, a kennel, you know, a rescue, or you're going to get it from whatever other means. But you go in and you look at the dogs, all of them, and you're trying to pick out that one dog you want. And there's always that one dog that is, when you lay that food down, that dog is going, he don't care. He or she is just going. And then there's always that one dog that's just sitting back. Like, Well, I eat when everybody else eat. Which one are you, Treylon? Are you that dog that is, as soon as I put it down, I don't care if it's 50 dogs out there, I'm trying to be first. Are you that dog?
It reminds me of a neighbor that I have who has two pit bulls, mm-hmm. I think, in his front yard. And one is always yapping. Mm-hmm. Anytime anybody walks by, bark, 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 bark. And the other one just stands there and just kind of looks around. And maybe that dog is vicious if you walk closer to it. But from across the street, he's just chilling. While the other dog's bark, 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 bark.
But you got to be – and listen, I don't want to – I'm not trying to assume that he's not. Or I'm not trying to assume.
But we don't have proof of concept.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. Like, I'm not, because the last thing I want is for somebody to say, well, Derek says he doesn't have this. No. That's not what I'm saying. I'm trying to figure out if he does. Like, are you the dog that I just explained that when I lay the food down, you rushing in there to get it because you want it, because you hungry, you famished? Or you that other dog on the side that, you know, you may be famished and hungry, but you're just like, oh, I'm just going to wait for everybody else. No, you need to go in there and get your food, damn it. Move everybody else out the way. I'm starving. I'm trying to eat. My family needs to eat.
Jack is in East Nashville on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Jack, thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
D-Mace, I got a question.
Yes.
I don't want to sound like I'm picking on a man, because Lord knows that's a tough grown man's business of a game, but the way people get cut and traded, and you know how fast people can come and go in this business, how has this fella managed to stay here these several years now with so little to show for it? And understandably, yeah, he's been hurt, and a lot of it's not his fault, but I don't understand how he's still here. And I'll listen off air.
Thank you for the call, Jack.
Thank you, Jack. He's here because he was their first round pick, and he has shown flashes. And this is what this league is about. If you have what they perceive to be talent, if there's this potential there, especially if you are a first-round pick, then they're going to keep you a little bit longer than maybe what your production warrant. Listen, if he leaves, I know what you said about maybe he needs to go somewhere else and just have a new start. But you're not going to go somewhere else and have a new start if you don't have dog in you. If you don't have that ability to say, I want this, I'm hungry, I'm starving, you know, I want to eat. Unless you take that to the next place, you ain't going to have any success. I don't think in the last 20 years I've seen a first-round wide receiver, you know, have a abysmal, you know, first 4 years with one team and then go to another team and have a breakout career. That don't happen. It don't. There's more guys not doing it than there are guys doing it. When you get drafted first round and it don't work out at all with that team, you ain't going someplace else and all of a sudden you're going to start having success. It doesn't work like that, at least not in football at the wide receiver position. It's hard because once you get at the bottom of that depth chart, man, you're at the bottom of that depth chart on everybody's roster.
615-737-1025. We'll take your thoughts on Treylon Burks. But coming up next, we'll welcome Jared Stillman onto the program. I hope he's doing okay. He was tweeting through the NHL draft lottery. We'll see how Jared is doing. Coming up next, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025, 1063, The Game.
Shouldn't we, learn by dodging balls that are thrown at us, or?
That's what this sack of wrenches is for. If you can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball.
What? Oh!
Teammates Finkin and Donick, 1025, 1063 The Game. Oh, I made a couple of Patches O'Houlihan references earlier. Let's welcome in our Patches O'Houlihan, Jared Stillman. Jared, at the beginning of the show, I did a dramatic reading of some of your tweets from last night as you were tweeting through the NHL draft lottery. You said it would be Black Monday. On Friday, you said it would be Black Monday if the Predators announced that Andrew Brunette was returning and they dropped a fifth in the NHL draft lottery, both of which happened. So how are you doing today, Jared?
Hey, David, do you have my grid in front of you for today? I know sometimes Reed comes in or Ian used to come in with the grid in front of him. And do you have today's grid in front of you, Reed?
I do not.
Okay. So I'm just going to read to you guys off the top. This is good. This is like a good promo for what's coming at 2 o'clock.
That's the purpose of this segment.
And I think you guys, I know Adam always likes to take a look at the grid on his way out the door. 2 o'clock, 2, semicolon, 0, 0, actually 2, colon, 0, 0, 2, colon, 0, 0, Black Monday for Nashville Predators. Black Monday. It was awful. And I have to say, it was exhilarating television. I mean, I watched that, and I'm like, now I see why people got into marble races during COVID.
I was hypnotized by the floating balls.
Doing the second pick, I thought the presentation last night was great by ESPN for the most part. I felt like, you know, they brought in those three kids. I didn't need to interview them, but that's fine. But they brought up the three top prospects so that if you are a novice, you can at least kind of follow along. Like, I'm sure that Lindsay, who was watching the draft lottery with me last night, had no idea who Michael Misa was. But at least she now can kind of keep up. I thought that it was quick enough. I mean, the idea of 30 seconds until the next ball. I thought that was probably maybe a little over the top.
Yes.
But the one thing that got me was I'm watching the numbers, and it's the number comes up, and then we had to wait 35 seconds while some guy filled out a card like it was freaking customs to hand it to the deputy commissioner. Who freaking won? Tell me, ESPN. So it was a painful night for Predators fans. It was one I was expecting, but it absolutely was painful. And the fifth overall pick historically is – it's not that it's a bad pick. It's just that it's not a good pick. And the Predators, for that godforsaken season that they just had, they needed a good pick last night.
So they still may be able to get
Well, let me ask you this question, Jared, because I did text you this yesterday. So I looked at two mock drafts that were released right after the draft lottery, one on Sportsnet and one at The Athletic. And both of them had the Predators taking James Hagans at fifth. if that were to happen, if he were to fall to fifth and the Predators take him at fifth, would you be happy with that?
I would call that the best of a bad situation. You know, I guess that's probably I wouldn't say that. The best of a bad situation is probably if they end up trading up to number two for Misa, which they might be able to do. People don't understand. This isn't the NFL. And I think far too many people that like the NFL think the NHL draft is like the NFL draft. It's not. And teams usually do not trade the very high picks. If you want to win the cup, you have to have those players on your team. I mean, for instance, Barkov and Sam Reinhart in Florida, who just won the cup. Number two overall. Vegas has Jack Eichel. Now, they never picked that high, but they acquired Jack Eichel, who was number two overall. Colorado had Nathan MacKinnon, who was number one overall. Tampa won two cups with Steven Stamkos at number one overall. I mean, Crosby and Ovechkin and those guys. Like, if you really want to win the cup, you've got to have a pick that's at the very, very top of the draft. And teams just do not trade those picks. Maybe there's a chance. I saw Scott Wheeler write about this at The Athletic, that maybe San Jose, who absolutely needs defense help, and they're probably not going to get the Schaefer kid at number two, maybe they'll make a deal to move back to number five. It will cost you a boatload in order to be able to do it. That would be the best of a bad situation. Hagen's falling to five is probably the second part of that. But I view Hagen's as more of a second-line guy than a true number one at 5'11". I don't see him as a McDavid-type player, which, again, is what Misa may end up being. I mean, look at the numbers Misa's putting up in the OHL, and that was kind of the big hope that the Predators could land that. Again, I think Hagen's at his size and his productivity, and he's still very young, but I think he, again, maybe more profiles towards that second-line guy, that Travis Konechny type, than the front-line guy. And the Predators, hate to say it, they need front-line guys.
I'm always hesitant to do this, looking back at previous drafts and saying, well, these players were drafted in that spot. But looking at forwards historically, in recent history, who were drafted at number five overall, Elias Pettersson was a number five overall pick, has a 100-point season on his resume.
But can you win with Elias Pettersson?
Well, the Canucks certainly didn't do that this year. Elias Lindholm was a fifth overall pick.
What's he?
Elias Lindholm?
Yeah, what is he? First of all, it's Elias.
Elias. I was talking about Elias Pettersson, Elias Lindholm.
What really is Elias Lindholm? I think, and I love Elias Lindholm's game, and he was a pain in the ass for the Predators last year in the playoffs. He's a second-line center.
That's fair. I mean, Braden Schenn was a fifth overall pick. Blake Wheeler was a fifth overall pick. You can find productive players, but I understand to your point. Are those the players that put you over the top to win the Stanley Cup? They're a part of it, but are they leading the charge? Probably not.
I understand. I'll ask you this question, Adam. Right now, who do you think is your favorite to win the Cup?
Ooh, that's a good question. My favorite to win the Cup. I mean, based on what they were able to do in the first round, despite having two major injuries, I like the Dallas Stars right now, to be honest with you. That's what my gut tells me.
And I would say that you're not going to say Winnipeg, because even though Winnipeg
Dallas would have to beat Winnipeg to get to where they're going.
I know, but like, Winnipeg is a very, very well-built team. They're a well-coached team, and they've got the best goalie on the planet, albeit he stinks right now, but they have the best goalie on the planet. They won the President's Trophy this year, and I don't think anybody really thinks Winnipeg's going to win the Cup. And that's where I go back to, again, like, if you're going to win the Cup, the team that I would take right now is Toronto. Like, I thought the way that they played last night after Stolarz threw up all over the bench, and they really, for the most part in that game, dominated the Florida Panthers last night. I think that Toronto's got Matthews. Like, there's Matthews, there's McDavid, there's Barkov, there's all these great players taken at the top of the draft. And in hockey, you have to get that player. And that's, I just feel like it's an opportunity that the Predators missed out on.
Well, I mean, it wasn't their fault they missed out on it. I mean, you know, but again,
I'm not blaming them.
But don't you believe with the, because again, whoever comes in, more than likely, they're not going to be a day one starter. Even though you would love that, more than likely, they are not going to be on the day one roster. But say if he is, coupled with the guys you already have on the team, shouldn't that be enough? Shouldn't that be enough to have you thinking, okay, but maybe your thought is they're bringing Coach Bruno back, so that's a negative. even if it was a positive that you went and got the guy that you wanted, coupled with the guys that are already here. I just think if you add someone, whether he can play now or not, a lot of it hinges on how that unit that they had last year comes back.
Yeah, I don't care about if he plays next year or not. Again, when it comes to
winning the cup, these guys. So you're thinking down the line.
Yeah, it takes about 6 or 7 years before these guys start competing for the cup. Okay. So, you know, like Nathan MacKinnon in 2013 wins the cup in 22. Like, that's what you're looking at for the Predators, and I just don't think they can do it without that kind of player.
Well, we'll hear what Jared has left to say. It's Black Monday and four. Well, it's Black. I guess it's Black Tuesday. Well, it was Black Monday, but he's going to talk about it on a Tuesday. Coming up next, that's Stillman & Company, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Beloved, lovely people, have a safe, blessed, wonderful Tuesday. Peace.